I am Monica Brackney, and I'm the surveillance coordinator for the HIV program at New Mexico Department of Health. And I'm here to talk about a group of cases of HIV/AIDS in New Mexico, and those are our foreign-born cases. I have no disclosures. I wanted to introduce you to New Mexico a little bit before I got started. We have about 2 million people in our state, about 15 persons per square mile. There's only 5 states that are less densely populated than New Mexico, so we're a largely rural state, with our urban, our metro area of Albuquerque being the largest city in the state, along with, followed by Rio Rancho, which is right outside of Albuquerque, Santa Fe, and Las Cruces, which kind of all line up along the Rio Grande and I-25. We're a majority-minority state, meaning that the majority of our population are made up of minorities. We border 5 other states: Arizona, Utah, Colorado, Oklahoma, and Texas. And 3 of our counties border Mexico. We are home to the part of the Navajo Nation and Apache and 19 different and distinct pueblos. And in the year 2000, 8% of our residents of New Mexico were foreign-born. So we have, for our surveillance system, we use the Enhanced HIV/AIDS Reporting System. AIDS became reportable in New Mexico in 81, and HIV in 1998. Country of birth is listed on our case report form, and about 89% of those are complete in that field. So 11% of our cases, we don't know the country of birth. In addition to active surveillance, in addition to passive surveillance, where we have laboratory reports and healthcare provider reports come into our program, we also do a little bit of active surveillance, where we go around to some of the major facilities in the state and make sure that we have complete data on all of our cases, and to make sure we haven't missed any cases. For the purposes of this analysis, I included those who were born in U.S. dependencies as part of our U.S.-born population. Most of the data I present is cumulative, meaning that it includes persons who have died and persons who were diagnosed out of state. There is one slide on incidence, and that includes only people diagnosed in New Mexico in that particular year. We do not obtain the legal status of any of the cases that we collect information on. So not surprisingly, since we border Mexico, most of our cases, 75% of our foreign-born cases, were born in Mexico or Central America. Over time, over the last 10 years, foreign-born cases have made up anywhere from 10 to 30% of our cases. Cumulatively, foreign-born cases have made up about 8% of our cases. So in the last 10 years, we have seen an increase in the proportion of our foreign-born cases. If we start to look at demographics of our cases and we compare them to U.S.-born, we have a slightly greater proportion of males in our U.S.-born cases than females. Greater proportion of males in our U.S.-born cases when compared to our foreign-born cases. If we look at age, it's almost exactly identical if we're looking at age of diagnosis. If we look at race, not surprisingly, the majority of our foreign-born cases are Hispanic, and they're making up 79% of our foreign-born cases. In the past, whereas they make up 30% of our U.S.-born cases. However, in the past couple of years, we've seen Hispanics make up nearly 50% of our new cases. If we look at risk, we do see some differences. Foreign-born cases are twice as likely to report high-risk heterosexual sex as their risk factor when compared to U.S.-born cases. And that's defined by CDC as high-risk heterosexual sex is defined by CDC as heterosexual sex with someone who has a risk factor, such as injection drug use, a woman having sex with a bisexual male, or someone who's otherwise known to have HIV. Another thing to note with risk is 19% of our foreign-born cases have no identified risk, compared to 5% of our U.S.-born cases. A couple of reasons for that could be, there are a couple of possibilities. One could be that there are that foreign-born persons may be less comfortable talking about risk because of differences in culture. There could be language barriers that don't allow them to fully express or feel comfortable talking about risk. Another issue is that our foreign-born cases may be more likely to leave the state after being diagnosed, either to go back to their home country or just to move to another state looking for work. They're also maybe less likely to seek care services, which is where we often get risk from. A lot of times people, when they're initially diagnosed, don't want to talk about their risk factors, but once they establish care with a provider, they may feel more comfortable talking about risk. So if we look at progression to AIDS, our foreign-born cases are less likely to progress to AIDS. However, they're more likely to be concurrently diagnosed with HIV and AIDS. And by concurrently, that's defined as being diagnosed with AIDS within 12 months of the initial HIV diagnosis. So that's somewhat of a contradiction that we have less foreign-born, we have a smaller proportion of foreign-born cases progressing to AIDS, yet we have a larger proportion of them concurrently diagnosed or late testing. And I think there could be a couple of explanations for that. One is that, I had discussed before that we're kind of seeing more foreign-born cases be diagnosed in New Mexico over the past 10 years. And over the past 10 years, there's definitely been advances in treatment. Therefore, our HIV foreign-born cases may be less likely to progress to AIDS because they're sort of, the epidemic came along a little bit more recently than our U.S., than the total of our U.S.-born cases. Another reason could be that, a lot of these cases could be lost to follow-up. They could have, gone back to their home country. They could have, moved to other states, and therefore, because, a lot of foreign-born persons are, migrant workers, so they may have moved on to other states. And another issue is legal status. If some of these folks are not legal, they may be more reluctant to seek services, and therefore we may never get that AIDS diagnosis. So just to discuss a few limitations of this data, this is surveillance data. Country of birth is not routinely asked by healthcare providers. So usually when we have this information, it's because the provider has noted it somewhere in the chart. And therefore, it's probably more of a proxy for someone who has, migrated to the U.S. in their adult later in their adult life, as opposed to people who may have come over when they're children. So there may be a reason that the doctor knows. Maybe they're only Spanish-speaking, maybe they have a heavy accent, or maybe they speak of a lot of family being in Mexico or in another country. Our numbers are small. New Mexico is a small state, and we have a small number of cases, so they're unstable, and it's really difficult to firmly establish trends. The date of diagnosis might not be entirely accurate. If they were diagnosed in their home country, we wouldn't have that initial diagnosis. So that may inflate the number of concurrently diagnosed cases or late testers. Again, they might be lost to follow-up when they return if they return to their country of birth. And as with all HIV data, the time and place of infection is unknown, and we only have diagnosis dates. So in summary, foreign-born cases make up of about 8% of our cases overall, and foreign-born persons make up about 8% of our residents, so they're not more or less likely to be diagnosed with HIV. Most of our cases come from Mexico and Central America. They're less likely to have progressed to AIDS, yet they're more likely to be late testers. And we are seeing a trend of more foreign-born cases being diagnosed over the last 10 years. which goes along with the fact that we have more foreign-born persons moving into our state over the last 10 years as well. So some challenges: language barriers and access to care are challenges for people who are foreign-born. The Immigration and Nationality Act bans HIV-positive persons from emigrating to the U.S. without a very difficult-to-obtain waiver, which includes proving that you can pay for all of your HIV care by yourself. This may inhibit foreign-born persons from getting tested to begin with, and it may inhibit foreign-born persons from seeking legal status because they know they'll be that there's a good chance they'd be turned away because of their status. So delaying testing and treatment can result in this larger proportion of late testers. Another issue for foreign-born persons who are from Mexico, and since we're on the border and most of our foreign-born cases do come from Mexico, there's a perception that there's a lack of treatment available if they were to go back to Mexico. And about 10 years ago, that was definitely true. About half of the AIDS cases in Mexico were not covered by antiretrovirals. But there have been a lot of changes in the healthcare. A lot of changes in healthcare in Mexico over the last 10 years, and in 2003 they achieved universal access to highly active antiretroviral treatment for persons living with AIDS in Mexico. And this slide was provided by UMBAST, and I just wanted to take a minute to talk about UMBAST because they've done a lot of great work. So many of you have probably heard of the AIDS education and training centers around the country, and UMBAST is the U.S.-Mexico border AIDS education training center steering team. And one of their main objectives is continuity of care for persons who are returning or going back and forth from Mexico and Central America to the United States. So they've created some great materials with they've created recommendations and lists for providers who have patients that are returning to Mexico that lists all the documentation that they need in order to expedite the process of getting into care in Mexico. And they've also they've got a list of contacts for different care agencies in Mexico so that they can sort of talk directly to those agencies and establish a little bit of a relationship there. To help the person go back to Mexico and without interruption in care. They've also recently drafted some recommendations for providers with patients that are returning to Central America, and they're looking for feedback on those on that information. So I've put their website up there. I'm sorry, you can't see it very well. But if you Google UMBAST, it should come up right away at the top. And they have a lot of epidemiologic information and practical information for providers. And so if you're looking for more information on that, you can find it there. So thank you.